For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, everybody. There are a number of people here whom I don't recognize, so the likelihood is you don't recognize me either. My name is Nyozon Eric Schott. Our guiding teacher, my teacher, Taigan Daniel Layton, is on sabbatical, and more immediately is recovering from a recent surgery. So others of us have been asked to do talks, and today it's me. We started, as we always start, with the sounding, with a wooden mallet on what we call the han out here, this wooden block. And what that does is it sends out what is called the hange, the little poem, aphorism, whatever you would call it, written on the han. In our case, it's life and death, birth and death is the great matter. Do not waste time. Another version, perhaps a more traditional version, is something, there are variations, but it's something like this. Great is the problem of birth and death. Impermanence surrounds us. Be awake at every moment. Do not waste your life. I've been reflecting on this the last couple of days because some of us, myself included, participate in a related group down in Hyde Park on Wednesdays. And last Wednesday, Yoshin Laurel Ross, who's not here today, gave the talk. And she sort of built it in part around our version, the one we have here, birth and death is the great matter, do not waste time. And she spoke about a number of interesting things, including this a question that came up about a close relative of hers who's ending her days in a nursing home. To all intents and purposes, or to what we see, not able to do much. And so the question came up, well, what would it mean to waste time there? And she also alluded or referred to a poem that has been discussed here numerous times, and many of you will know it, A Summer's Day by Mary Oliver, that ends with the line, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? The discussion was interesting. One person raised the question of whether, in making a statement like, do not waste time, if that did not implicitly requires to ask ourselves, well, is there something we're supposed to be doing? Waste time in reference to what? And because of whom that question was coming from, and I will say also because I've always personally, for reasons maybe I'll get into a little bit here, had kind of a slightly negative response to this formulation, do not waste time, I kind of rejected the question a little bit. I mean, there was some discussion, but internally I was kind of rejecting the question. And I said, because of whom asked it, and that had to do with a kind of very sort of logical, hair-splitting kind of way in which that sometimes go, which I recognize because I'm like this myself. And so I tried to reshift the conversation by bringing in this other version do not waste your life. So there was this question, time, life, and Howard Ruan, who's not here today, later emailed me and wanted to know the source of this and wanted to know the Chinese characters for the Hange. And that was a little hard to dig up, and it turns out the source is actually seems to be kind of lost in time. Nobody really knows where it came from, apparently, although we do know that it came to Japan with Chinese Obaku monks in the 17th century, relatively recently. But it's said to go back to a monastic code written in the 12th century, but Taigen couldn't find it there, and there's some indication it might have been much, much earlier. Nobody really knows. But in addition to Howard, who contacted me later with this question, I was also contacted by a number of other people. I mean, obviously, something that Gyoshin presented was really resonating. And it dawned on me that most of those other questions came from older people, people in their 70s. And they were really responding to this question, do not waste time. And sort of in the context, apparently, of, thinking about Gyoshin's relative and being sort of later in their own life and feeling some different kind of urgency than we sometimes feel, with something, a more, in some ways, grander, less imperative way. When we're younger and healthier, we tend to think in terms of a lifetime, and we tend to think it, reflexively, we think it's going to go on for a long time. And then I reflected that, the person who asked this question about, well, what are we supposed to be doing with our time? Somebody that I'd had a kind of a practice discussion with not too many days before, and he feels like his life has kind of fallen apart in a number of ways. And was asking me then. I'm surprised I didn't make the connection right away, but he was like, look at me. And I'm 70 years old. I don't know how much time I have left. I'm not really, I'm going to go into that. But I don't know how much time I have left. What should I do? And, I pointed out that, in fact, none of us know how much time we have left in this round. And it doesn't matter if we're 12 or if we're 30 or if we're 70 or if we're 90. Although experience seems to indicate that the further you go along on that path of counting off the days, the more likelihood that it's getting closer, whenever it may be. And we talked about practice in that context. So the question, what do we do with our one wild and precious life? That's, after all, what is at stake with this message, this disseminated when the Han is struck, isn't it? Consider the first line, birth and death is a great matter. Another way to read that, we could say birth and death is a great matter. The character used for birth could also mean life. Life and death is a great matter. But the same two characters, the one for life, the one for death, or the one for birth and death, given a different pronunciation in Japanese, is sometimes used for samsara, right? The confused, troubled lives we lead that we're trying to see beyond, right? So that's interesting. Samsara is a great matter, And again, that dovetails fairly nicely. It's like it's not some abstract, birth, capital B, death, capital D, that's the great matter. It's this. It's like how we are living what we are living, what we are experiencing moment to moment, right? So in the first reading, birth and death, as I said, is more compelling for me. Life and death seem a bit more distant because death is something we usually think about as sometimes opposed to life. It's something that will happen down the road at some point. But life thought of in one way is what, as I said, is happening right now. And birth and death are names, and like all names, arbitrary, by which we sometimes mark the boundaries from what we perceive as the beginning and an end. In other words, life thought of that way comprises both birth and death. And because life is happening right now, birth and death also are happening right now, moment by moment. Our lives are never happening at some other time. You know, we move through time in some sense, but they don't happen at another time. They're happening now, moment to moment. And birth and death are happening right now, moment to moment. In the longer version, we say, the second line is, impermanence surrounds us. In addition to the impermanence of our lives, often we are haunted, troubled by what we call the first noble truth, this awareness that things, or at least our experience of things, somehow off-kilter, never quite right, never entirely satisfactory. Call this dukkha. Samsara and dukkha are kind of the waters we swim in moment to moment in this thing we call life. And it's kind of our horizon. We can't see beyond that often. If we experience this as a problem of some kind, and I think most of us do most of the time, the question immediately arises, well, what can we do about it? What is a proper or effective response to such a situation? Again, the question is like the one that Mary Oliver asks us, what will we do with this one wild, precious, and I would add, largely uncontrollable life? How do we respond? How do we live? We have another chant that we do here on Monday nights and other times when we do services. We call it the repentance verse. All my ancient twisted karma, born from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion, born through body, speech, and mind, I now fully avow. Karma is another one of those really, really polysemous, multiple meaning, rich words. The root sense is simply action, which I'll come back to. But as the fuller version of the chant states, somehow it's become ancient and twisted. It's a product of greed, hate, and delusion, born of body, speech, and mind, that has become sedimented in our lives and experience and perpetuates our spinning, cycling through, being stuck in the rounds of samsaric experience, however we think of that. It's the engine that drives that stuckness, that endless spinning. The problem, which is that of which that is a domain, the realm in which suffering, dukkha, flowers. It clearly has a moral dimension, as is often usually picked up on. It matters what we do moment to moment. As one text tells us, we are the heir of our actions, and our actions are the womb from which we are born. It's interesting. And even though many, many aspects of our life are entirely outside our control, it all lands here. So responsibility for response falls on us, right? But when you think about it, from this week alone, just that much, we can see that although our actions are always determining and the sources of those actions, these endless causes and conditions that extend way beyond what we can see and appreciate. It's part of the reason we mark that as ancient and twisted. Any view of karma as entirely deterministic and fatalistic must be kind of off kilter somewhere, right? It's not fatalistic or deterministic exactly. We sometimes talk about escaping from karma. So from that point of view, karma as a doctrine and impermanence and change means something entirely different than that deterministic kind of view. That means that liberation, stepping out of that, is somehow possible. So again, the question, what does it mean to not waste our life, and how do we live this one wild, precious life? The repentance chant ends in a vowel of our ancient twisted karma and a sort of full acknowledgement of our lives. I should also add that we tend to think of karma in entirely personal terms, but because the karma through which our lives are expressed, have endless, you could say infinite, causes and conditions. And because of the doctrine of, if we want to put it that way, of non-self, the sort of awareness of ourselves, among other things, as a somehow constructed entity, provisional, you could say empty, karma can't entirely belong to us. I don't know what that would mean. And so these days, more and more, we often hear about, the karma of society, the societies in which we're living, the cultural karma that we inherit, with all the difficulties that brings. And, we can sort of give the headlines, for what we're currently experiencing, endemic racism, sexism, homophobia, fear of outsiders, all these things, right? And it follows because, we often, more and more people talk about Zazen as a physical practice. But part of the implication of that is that it's an embodied practice, and to be embodied means to be enmeshed. And that means that my life is enmeshed with all of yours, right? And it's enmeshed and influenced and born out of not only my own personal stuff, but the stuff we share, the stuff we're born into, language, culture, all of that things, right? So if what we think of as my personal karma, because of how it lands on me, is somehow my responsibility, so somehow must all that be. And if I'm called to do something about my karma, I must also be being called to respond, say, do something about all that sometimes thought of as outside karma. Because really, the separation, if there is one, is quite tenuous and dubious and ultimately not identifiable. This is part of what it means to say that we have an Atman, that we, with all things, are empty, that we inter are, to use that language. So, we say we avow that. Now, avow, looked in the dictionary, as I sometimes do, and it says to acknowledge or declare openly and unashamedly. But somehow that doesn't, you know, that much doesn't seem to take us very far, right? Because, I mean, it's good as far as it goes, but it's also kind of like easy to think, well, things are as they are, and I am as I am, and, you know, I've got a difficult, twisted, troubled past, however we think of that, as I think most people do if they look at themselves, you know, end of story. But it's not the end of the story, right? And sometimes we go through that chant, and it's, I was talking about the meal chant the other day. We often don't, like, consider the implications of what's buried in our liturgical things. For example, I talked a few weeks back about not really considering, you know, how our food comes to us. You know, we say it, but it's kind of by rote. So I'm thinking this is maybe a bit too passive. Kaz Ta-Nehisi proposes in his translation, I now fully atone. You know, that maybe is a little helpful because atone means to make amends as for a sin or a fault. Now, in Dharma, we don't usually talk much about the word sin. We don't find it entirely helpful. But we do talk about hindrances, obstructions, and, of course, ancient twisted karma. And this sort of moves us from resting in the relative passiveness of mere acknowledgement toward the direction of actually trying to work with it, trying to do something about it. Here, I'd like to bring in the word samskara. Samskara is different. It's not the same thing as samsara, which I mentioned previously. Most of us are familiar from it with it primarily through our chanting of the Heart Sutra. It says that form is emptiness, emptiness is form. The same is true of sensations, perceptions, formations, consciousness. In this context, samskara is formations. Now, what does that mean? It's kind of the, we might think of it as the internal face of karma. You know, and this becomes a little bit clear if we think of, we flesh it out with some of the other translations for that word, fabrication, formation, condition, volition, volitional action, conditioning factors, we could say habits, predisposition. There's a tendency for us to repeat because there's an energy to everything that we've done, everything that we've experienced. And so we tend to recapitulate it as we go out into the next moment, as we experience this birth and death each moment. And so there's this tendency to repeat, to repeat, to repeat, although in new contexts. And what this does is it also, again, it keeps us kind of tangled up. It keeps us enmeshed in reproducing, sometimes actively, usually unconsciously, the conditions in a different sense that lock us into this view of inadequacy, unsatisfactoriness, that something's off, that we're not enough, that there's something fundamentally wrong with the fact that we grow old and sick and die. You know, it perpetuates that. You know, it tends to coagulate and harden. And that's precisely what it means to be conditioned beings, to be karmic beings, in the way that I just talked about, to reproduce the conditions of our own unhappiness. So we see why, in relative or short terms, as we sometimes talk about, it's good to think about producing good or wholesome condition karma, bringing about good conditions, and sometimes in the bigger picture, in some ways, thinking about it, getting free of karma altogether, although keep in mind the famous Fox koan. You have to be very careful about how to think about this. Well, how do we do that? Years ago, I gave a talk here in which I talked about the Hange, this poem or statement, as kind of a call, to which the response was the Bodhisattva vow. So I was thinking, okay, a vow, a tone. Could vow work here? How does that work? And I got a little stumped at first because, when I investigated it, it seemed like vow and avow were not actually related to one another. They come from different Latin words. But I looked a little deeper, and it turns out that all three of these words, a vow, a tone, vow, actually all trace back to a single Proto-Indo-European root, the same one. And that, among other things, that carries the sense of act, to be active, to take agency. And another of the Latin words that derives from the same root also has that sense, to act, to conduct, to do. So the point being, when we avow our karma, if we consider it, we're also committing, or at least raising the possibility of committing, to acting on it. To not just passively sort of saying, oh, there it is, but actually like working with it, loosening it, transforming it, so that something more satisfactory, life-enhancing, wholesome, can take place in the next step, moment to moment to moment to moment. So again, the question, you know, what do we do with this one wild and precious life? How do we not waste time? How do we be awake at every moment? How do we avow or atone for our ancient twisted karma? I'd like to step back. I should have said it before, but this question of time, life, you know, when we think about it in these terms, and I think about the urgency that seemed to be behind these questions that I got from some of the older people, it became clear to me that my own sort of preference for one or the other was what we could call very, it was coming out of samskara, it was coming out of my own conditioning. But there really is no difference, right? Time, life, time is, you say, moment after moment, but so is our life. And it's all past and future, as T.S. Eliot noted, all point here. And maybe to the immediately succeeding thing. So, these questions, what do we do with this one wild, precious life? How do we atone for our ancient, twisted karma? Well, people have to look that up for themselves, I guess. Where my ancient and twisted karma has led me is to practice, by which I mean engagement with the precepts and with zazen as the path to kind of sober up from the intoxication of what we call the three poisons, greed, hate, and delusion, that we acknowledge in our repentance verse, and to wrest some freedom, both personal freedom and freedom in that broader sense of the culture I inhabit and am embedded in, the social life, all of that, some freedom from the compulsion of the samskaric responses, the karmic responses, and to realize and express myself thereby as a human being, as a human being, this is something that can only be done now, moment to moment, not wasting time in this effort, not wasting our lives, and so on, and we've often discussed here, and I won't go into it now, zazen has a particular, very important function in this, because that's where we witness those mechanisms most clearly. clearly, I believe. So again, you know, we have to come to these things ourselves, but that's kind of how I answered the question for myself. What do I do with this one wild, precious life? Is I commit myself again and again, fall off again and again, and recommit to waking up, to seeing clearly, to responding compassionately, all the things that we talk about in these various formulations we have here about the Eightfold Path, about the Paramitas, so on and so on. It's possible that other people have better ideas. I've not heard them. I welcome them now, as well as any other comments or questions you might have. So thank you very much. We've got a few minutes to discuss. I've been on a bit long, I'm afraid. Yeah, David. You're welcome. It's another formulation. Yeah.
Time passes swiftly and opportunities are lost.
Okay.
So that the crux of that is that what are we doing in the moment of this? Each moment, that moment's gone. The moment I just spoke now, that's gone. I can't go back. In each moment, are we taking the opportunity to realize our life in the sense of to be truly, quote, liberated? To really be in touch with all of space. I read something yesterday in a book on the Eightfold Path that talked about dukkha coming from the words to be separate and space, and so that we separate ourselves from all of space. We separate ourselves from reality. And so the question is, are we taking an opportunity in this moment to realize that we are not separate, but we are in relationship and connected to all of space. And I think that to say that don't waste time is one way, but another way to say it again, maybe on a more positive note, is to take advantage of the opportunity of each moment.
Another way we talk about that is there's always a Dharma gate. They're endless. Do we step through or not? Thank you.
Michael.
I really appreciate your talk and all the research and effort you put into it. I think that it just reminds me, one of the things that, and I really appreciate you pointing to, you know, that life and time are basically, you know, the same thing. Or that, you know, there's a harmony between life and time, birth and death. But one of the things that just made me think about personally as I reflect on things that I'm going through is that a lot of times sort of one of the first things that I can do is to get out of the way, you know, just in a sense, just, you know, not passive, but some kind of active acceptance, surrender, to just...
our response to our current situation is very different than, say, like
Bill Gates' response to his situation would have been on a moment-to-moment level, even if they're guiding principles that are helpful there. And there's something maybe not satisfactory about that answer. We'll get it figured out, but it seems like Zazen offers the opportunity to find for yourself what your response should be.
I really appreciate that. That Whitman thing's great. And that's exactly it touches on why I, for a while, was having trouble with this idea of not wasting time. And the question that I now recognize was a good one. You know, does that mean there's something we're supposed to be doing? Because you will find, because we all have to walk our own paths, all have to live our own lives, that in Zen situations, people are a little bit loath to sort of tell people, well, you should do this, you should do that, right? And all those nuances of, you know, time, that I associate, time is money. We're hiking, we got to get somewhere, don't dawdle to look at the flowers, you know, all these sort of compulsive things. What you say really resonates with me. I would simply add that, you know, so yes, as Taigen often says, nobody can tell you how to be Buddha, you know. At the same time, that's really true. We sort of always make the next step, right? But at the same time, you come to appreciate that we've got this wealth of guidance, this suggestions that sort of gently urge us in the direction of walking forward wisely and skillfully. And that's another way to look at sort of practice. It's 11 o'clock, so maybe one more, if there is one more. Hi, Hokatsu.
Hello.
You again.
Me. This question reminded me of, there was a series of articles in the New York Times at some point that interviewed people at the end of their lives or in their elder years, and I always thought, like, what I took from that was people weren't like, well, I wish I'd made more money, or, you know, but they kind of wished that they actually fulfilled their deepest longings, and, you know, those were typically, did I love well? And I think about that, like, wasting time, but I think more about, like, in each moment, do you love well? And, I mean, you know, love maybe has a bad rap in Zen, but I think there's something, it'd be kind of nice if that was on the Han, right?
It would be, yeah.
You know, like instead of don't pass your days and nights in vain.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Are you loving
you
that?
Who study the mystery? What could be more mysterious than love? Right.
Right.
I mean,
yes,
it's like,
right. That's a good point.
You know, yeah. It's one of those funny things because, the word love seems to have a sort of bad odor in Zen practice, but certainly not the phenomenon of love. Right. I mean, that's one way to think about it, right? That's what it's all about, you know, when you think about precepts and kindness and compassion and all that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we should close, and then we'll do the four Bodhisattva vows, and then we will have some announcements, all right?